Day 5, Period 1. Caroline references Rancière's The Emancipated Spectator on the day she leads the group. I remember it being included in a study group event at Dancemakers, so I search for it in my files. This takes some time. There are images and text, and I focus my time here on the images. Day 5, Period 2. And the emphasized excerpts from within the text itself. There are 31 images. All but 3 of them include people. I don't know who selected the images, nor are they credited, at least in the photocopied version I have, which is 6 double-sided pages, with the words "for library use only" on the second side of the 4th page. The images are either photographs or manufactured art objects and range widely in style, scale, and content. Day 5, Period 3. I focus on the excerpted, highlighted texts, because I imagine that someone has curated them as a way of pointing to the big ideas. The first one talks about community, a word or concept I have trouble with because its ubiquitous use is so often sloppy. Rancière connects theater with the living community. I wonder if this is different from a dead one, or what exactly he means. Later, he says that the theater is a manifestation of the aesthetic constitution of a community, which makes sense to me. This constitution includes how we occupy space and time and fill it with gestures and attitudes. He distinguishes this from the form-ridden and rules-ridden institution or political body, and all of this since the rise of German Romanticism in the 19th century. Day 5, Period 4. I jump to the last of the 5 excerpted texts. Here we find the clarion call for privileging equality in the spectator vis-à-vis the art object, art experience, in terms of its manufacture, integration, and appropriation. I wonder if this speaks to relational aesthetics. As I understand it, the acknowledgement that the presence and agency of the spectator is crucial to the art experience itself, that without his or her engaged presence, the art experience doesn't exist. Day 5, Period 5. I watch a video I have taken at the outside barbecue. We are silent. The fire is being stoked and a small group has gathered, each of us waiting his or her turn to add food to the grill. The silent dinner is one of my favorite activities at 8 days. Moments of subversive collaboration flourish in a climate that, thanks to the silence, evokes so clearly my desire for privacy. Together. Focused on our own tasks, we nonetheless sense the same in others and know that the sum of the parts is indeed greater. Day 5, Period 6. Distractions, distractions. We live in a man-made, noisy world, and this on top of the non-stop chatter that already fills my head. Day 5, Period 7. I turn to day 4, Friday. On the right-hand side of page are some notes from Freya's proposal, and on the left, a schema for my proposal that never happened. I notice similarities. Freya is interested in avatars, and I am interested in a practice not so well articulated yet I call othering. Freya talks about remixing and reframing, mimicking versus representation. I have similar questions. I see othering as a possible way into experiencing deep empathy towards another by becoming them as deeply and complexly as possible. To do this, I had imagined assigning one person in the group, the observer, to someone else, the source. The source would not know who is observing them. Over the week, each observer would chronicle or notice how they might think about becoming the other. At the week's end, I would ask everyone to share what he or she had discovered. While thinking about Freya's proposal, I had written, "Issues around the politics, ethics of the source is crucial, especially around permission, consent, and agency." I wonder now if and how this might be true. Day 5, Period 8. I spent this last event of the day reading from Liz Lerman's Hiking the Horizontal. This book was not part of our shared library at 8 days, but thinking about how others work is within the spirit of our gathering. She says, "When everyone is committed fully to the project, the room is filled with small and great opportunities for gaining insight into life's mysteries." Day 6, period 1. I drop into day 6, Saturday, and notice a proposal by Andrew. He asks us to list 3 to 4 things that we think make good work. I write that good work, 1, makes me lean in. 2, surprises me. 3, allows me to understand in my body or my spirit that the performers are working on something in the here and now, and 4, pushes or questions my values. Andrew then asks us to pick 1 item from our list and to do something that intentionally doesn't include it. I pick number 2 and thinking of making something that won't surprise. I go to one of the working rooms and notice a blackboard. I write 1 on the left and 10 on the right. When I perform the thing, I start filling in the missing numbers in a random order, but it quickly becomes evident that I will be adding numbers 2 to 9. No surprise here. This proposal makes me think about viewer expectation and the permission we need to give them so they feel taken care of in a performance. And by taken care of, I mean mostly not being made to feel stupid. Even in the face of the unknown, we can provide tools and ways in that encourage curiosity rather than build walls of resistance. Day 6, period 2. I take a nap in honor of the notion of resting, an important part of 8 days. And by resting, I mean taking time away from out there to replenish and re-energize in here, so as to be able to go back out there more open, ready, and eager to jump back in. Day 6, period 3. I write this email to the participants of 8 days. Hey all, I am in the throes, late of course, typical me, of writing my documentation contribution for 8 Days 3. I decided to encounter my archive of the experience through a series of 8-minute events, 8 times per day, for 8 consecutive days. This email is event 6-3, 6th day, 3rd 8-minute period of the day. I came across the word connection in my notes, which made me think of networks and the relationships we have built with each other through 8 days. So, as a way of practicing connection, I am writing this email to say hello and to extend warm wishes for the holiday. My 8 minutes have run out. Cheers, Michael. Day 6, period 4. I notice 4 pictures of Ted and Christopher in my photo collection. I notice that Ted is much shorter than Christopher, that Ted is holding a glass of wine, and that Christopher has his left arm wrapped around Ted's shoulder. I scroll through the pictures quickly in succession in iPhoto, both forwards and backwards, and it reveals movement and narrative. In the first frame, they are looking at something, probably someone, off to their left. Ted notices me taking the pictures in the second shot, smirks because he realizes I am taking photos in the third shot, then breaks into a smile in the fourth, at which point Christopher looks at me too. I go back and forth nonstop. It's sweet, funny, genuine, and full of ease. It captures how generous both of them are to me when I need to talk. Day 6, period 5. Not knowing. I deeply fear what I don't know. Not in terms of the big things, like death, the afterlife, God, or hurricanes. It's the day-to-dayness of living that scares me the most. Being fulfilled, not hurting others, making a contribution, being liked. Yes, being liked. This last one is really problematic for me, because who really admits to caring about being liked? As I write this, I realize that maybe I should substitute like for not disappointing, and by that I mean not living up to others' expectations. But the kicker is this. How did these expectations come about? Were they really imposed by others, or did I make them up? I deeply admire people who seem carefree. What an ancient-sounding word. And by this, I mean people who work only to meet the measure of their own ambitions and desires. Not selfishly, as this might suggest, but in terms of doing the work always, consistently, and with humor, regardless and despite what others may say or suggest. Day 6, period 6. I work on trying to float. Day 6, period 7. I take a hit of pot and then lay down on two red chairs. My feet and lower legs hang off one end, and my head and arms hang off the other. I want to float, so I imagine the chairs aren't there by focusing on a proxy sensation in my hands, which are suspended 1 inch or so from the floor. It feels like 8 minutes lasts forever. Digits on my right hand keep coming into contact with the cement floor. I quickly pick them up as if burning. Strangely, the digits on my left hand don't come into contact ever with the white shag carpet. Odd. Does skin attract concrete more readily than polyester? I have nothing more to say on this experiment, so just sit quietly until the time runs out. Day 6, period 8. I'm now dancing in the dark, like we did on the last night of 8 days. Andrew is an amazing DJ. I make it dark now by using an eye mask. Like the floating experiment, it feels like forever, but is considerably more enjoyable. My body is warm and alive. I imagine a thing I could do. Write about contemporary pop music from the perspective of a teacher teaching someone who knows nothing about the current scene. About genres, artists, recognizable features, trends, comparative perspectives on how we got right here, right now. Publish it digitally. Then, every 2 months, talk about what's changed or appeared since the last time. I think of this because it would help me understand what's going on, as I am woefully ignorant about pop music.